Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
You are a human animal. You are a very special breed. For you are the only animal who can think, who can reason, who can read.
From KCRW Santa Monica, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. This week, I have three guests, and they're talking to me from the NPR studios in New York City. They are Art Spiegelman and Françoise Mouly. They are the editors and creators of the Little Lit series. The new volume is It Was a Dark and Silly Night. Along with them is Daniel Handler, a.k.a. Lemony Snicket, a contributor to the volume and the author of the rather remarkable adventures of the Baudelaire orphans, a series of unfortunate events, the 10th volume of which, The Slippery Slope, is coming out from HarperCollins next month. No one would have told me that America would be reading a Pulitzer Prize-winning book that would be about the cartoonist's father's experiences in a concentration camp, and yet the Pulitzer Prize-winning Mouse is that, and it's read by kids all over, as well as adults who started out being afraid of letting the kids see it because of the intensity of the material. Well, what we've got is this book, It Was a Dark and Silly Night. It's the third in the Little Lit series. And what I think this is the triumph of what, for lack of a more immediate word, I want to call the rebel or miscreant imagination. Because these are people who have grown up, have had children, and know how important it is to give children things that they haven't seen before that are going to delight and excite them, and that the dangers of this are small compared to boring them or turning them into subservient creatures with trite and cliched ideas about the imagination. All three of my guests, Françoise Mouly is the art editor of The New Yorker, have been breaking their minds to make things alive for kids. And I wanted to begin by asking you, since you are hardly the typical arbiters, what are the criteria for making it live?
I find that a difficult question because I'm I just, for the life of me, have been unable to discern any difference between children and adults. And I don't mean that in some very cutesy sense as much as that adults as individuals are complete mysteries to me, and so children likewise are equally mysterious. And that certainly there is a wide spectrum of what interests children and what they find to be, as you say, alive. And so I never have any children in mind whatsoever when I'm writing any story or any adults. I just try to do something that would interest me and hope that there are enough people who share my interests that I won't be driven out of town by an angry mob, which was my initial paranoia when I started writing the first Lemony Snicket book. I have no answer for how that is arbitrated, and so that thus I'm pointing desperately at my fellow guests.
Yeah, you know, I mean, one of the things that this sort of question leads to is trying to figure out the difference between a children's literature and an adult literature. And I know that as you were introducing me, Michael, I started bristling and getting really annoyed at you for blurring Mouse with Little Lit, because I originally was so intent on making very clear that Mouse was for adults. And for the first 5 years, when I was getting prizes for young adult literature as well as Pulitzer Prize, I was annoyed by this. And then I would meet parents who would bring their 11- and 12-year-old kids who really liked reading Mouse to me, and I would feel that these parents should probably be handed in for child abuse, giving a story about the death camps to their kids. And eventually all of these things began caving in, because I'd occasionally meet a 12-year-old whose response to my work was much more to the point than the parent who had brought them and also read the work. And as a result, I finally also got thrown back to a place similar to what Daniel was just talking about, and probably has been echoed by everybody else I've talked to who's worked in so-called kid books as well as grown-up books, which is, well, I work for me. You know, I try to work and make it clear and make it work for me.
My distinction was not between kids' books and adult books, or even what happened when Mouse became introduced into the children's world by way of awards and well-meaning adults with educational purposes up their sleeves. I meant to contrast the kind of sappy kids' books that, for instance, in the Lemony Snickets are made fun of under the guise of a book called The Littlest Elf. It's the only book that's managed to survive in a library that won't allow books to have rule-breaking in them. And even the town's, well, especially the town's handyman, he's probably the nicest person in the town, says that it bores him silly. And the difference between kids' books that are almost made, you know, they're made to make adults feel okay, but they put kids to sleep, they put adults to sleep, and their watchword seems to be safety. The great thing here is, by whatever means, the safety valve has been cast aside or re-examined or reshaped for something different and new to happen, and it seems like that's something that you guys support.
I think, you know, I agree with your basic premise, which has to do with there is a danger when you are putting out works that is specifically aimed at children, which is that you want to get on the correct side of the censorship board. I mean, there's an implicit assumption that certain approaches, certain topics are taboo with children. And it has become more so, I think. I'm actually, like, really surprised to see how creative, how innovative, how groundbreaking children's books were in 1940. And since then, it seems like it's become so codified into certain formats are allowed, you know, picture books for younger kids, written books, even Danielle Handler's books. I mean, you'll correct me if I'm wrong, but I think he had to insist on the format in which he wanted to publish them. He at first was told, like, that can't be done because he wasn't following a series of small hardcover for children. That's not.
Well, I certainly the designer of the books, Alison Donnelly, and the illustrator Brett Hellquist were a wellspring of support for that, so I wouldn't want it to be broadcast that I was all by myself stomping and moaning and begging for the format. But it is true that nearly everything about the Lemony Snicket books raised eyebrows when they were published from their format through their content. And I was just lucky enough that I had a great editor, Susan Rich, who always spoke up for them, and that largely we were left alone by the people at HarperCollins who might ordinarily respond to such eyebrow-raising and cancel or inhibit such activities. What frustrates me with children's literature and actually with adult literature is that what survives and endures are, in fact, these works that tend to break the rules, and it's, in fact, the safer works of literature that will disappear off children's bookshelves you know, within a year. And when my first novel as Daniel Handler was published, which is called The Basic Eight and set in a high school, I received some criticism that I shouldn't be writing about high school students who take the occasional drink and listen to opera and commit murders due to the fact that people would find it inappropriate. And somebody said, you know, that I should stick closer to the rules laid down by the great young adult book Catcher in the Rye. And I was forced to say, well, you know, I think actually that the scene in which Holden Caulfield hires a prostitute is probably still raises some eyebrows. It's just that people forget. It becomes codified. It becomes part of the canon. And now, unless you're really a teeth-gnashing conservative, you have no problem at all with Catcher in the Rye. And yet, when some new book comes out that will contain very similar elements, there's all this wailing and moaning. And you see that with, you know, the new Harry Potter book being, well, is it too dark? Does it have too much darkness in it?
My guests are Daniel Handler, a.k.a. Lemony Snicket, Art Spiegelman and Françoise Mouly, who have together put together Little Lit, It Was a Dark and Silly Night, in which there is a tale by the aforementioned Lemony Snicket. Both of their books actually are published by HarperCollins. Now, one of the things that it seems to me that you guys are talking about here is that there's a progression. Kids say terrifying things, and adults become afraid of children's imaginations and spend 8 or 9 years teaching the kids, by and large, to be afraid of their own imaginations. So that, you know, you get kids who are afraid of their dreams and adults who are very busy telling them stories incorrect, that they can't be harmed in their dreams or that they can't die in their dreams, i.e., making the place safe when it isn't safe, and safe, it seems to me, for the adult, more terrifying for the kid. What you're describing here, whether we're talking about Greek myths or Alice in Wonderland or the Maurice Sendak stuff and all the stuff we're considering here, Little Lit, the Lemony Snicket books, they're adored by children, and the kids aren't afraid of the violence. What is that makes the imagination into the victim here? It seems to be the victim of book editors, of adult groups who want to make sure that the books are, you know, at least homogenized, if not safe. Why does that get stigmatized so early?
I think there's, you know, a double attack from both the left and the right. I mean, there is a distrust of children, and I actually believe that you know, literacy is good as long as
that's a brave stand
to
take.
Well, I don't know, Françoise. I'd like a few minutes for the other side.
Yes. We'll take calls now.
Well, the other side, I think, is actually like on that there is. I mean, I won't say like a vast right-wing conspiracy, but there is a debasement of education, of reading, of thinking for oneself, of the development of private thought. I think that there is an enormous push on the part of companies and advertisers to target the generation of our children, that they are the next big market to appeal to. And I've felt even the difference between our 16-year-old and our 11-year-old, that that machine has been revving up for a while, but it is about to unleash like all of the might of its powers. Those kids, I was just reading an article this morning about commercials in schools and you know, the problems that brings about. I think that there is an intent to turn this generation, the baby boomers' children's generation, into consumers. That's extremely successful in doing this. And part of the mechanism is to keep them away from books.
I think the most important clue there is what Françoise is saying, that echoes exactly what you were asking, Michael, is the word homogenize. This thing of kind of making everything the same. It's much easier to sell people stuff if they all have exactly the same dreams, cues, and thoughts. And the dangers in the kind of literature we've been talking about is it encourages individual ways of navigating through the world that are different from one unique human to the next, you know? And so the kinds of storytelling and the kind of stories that encourage you to go out and become a Yeti, as in the Lemony Snicket story here, involve like you going into your own cave, figuring it out for yourself, and being able to move through the world yourself that way, as opposed to all being able to recite exactly the same five sitcoms that you have as the common reference with each other.
I mean, it is the leitmotif of Danielle's story for Little Lit is I would prefer to find out for myself.
Yes. Versus the adult saying, you can't always have what you want.
But you can have what we're selling.
Yes, right.
Yes. Perhaps it's time to plug the new movie of the Lemony Snicket books that Nickelodeon is hard at work on.
Well, Art once told me about his children's book, Open Me, I'm a Dog, that he wanted to introduce on a kid level, picture book level, the kinds of experiences that people have looking at Magritte or at Escher. That, you know, there should be this feeling of dizziness and excitement at being situated in that way. And I really think, you know, and, you know, slap me around if I'm wrong, that in the Lemony Snicket books, well, I've read some of the things that Daniel Handler says. He almost always mentions Pale Fire. And buried in the Lemony Snicket books, especially in the unauthorized autobiography of Lemony Snicket, is a whole controversy of who is the author of these books. Where did the text come from? When does this take place? There seem to be horse-drawn carriages in the first one. And yet, there, you know, the past of the books seemed to have happened a long, long time ago and just yesterday. Who is Lemony Snicket, and what does he have to do with Daniel Handler? These are all the questions of Pale Fire and of most modernist literature, that is to say, most literature, which always begins by inventing things before they happen, in that, for instance, we have, after all, Tristram Shandy before we have David Copperfield. And I think that, you know, writers want to put the most exciting things they know into their work. And then people who are living in a more representational world say, wait, I don't get it. Anyone who's looked at an André Breton collage book knows how to look at Lemony Snicket, the unauthorized autobiography, and it's thrilling. It thrilled me. Someone who doesn't know that a whole world exists for putting into question the things we think are real, they get scared when they find it between the pages of a book, because they were taught between the pages of a book are the facts. Look at your newspaper for the facts.
I've received a number of letters from children who had to do reports on an author and would choose Lemony Snicket and then read the unauthorized autobiography of Lemony Snicket and then put this information into the report, and then they would get a very poor grade from the instructor who wanted them to find the more sort of prosaic truth that one can find out about me if they dig hard enough, and that always disturbed me. And so my answer when I receive these letters is always the same, that I say, tell your teacher that I've looked over your report and that it's perfectly accurate, and that if she gives you any more trouble, I'm going to come over and challenge her to a sword fight.
Send Count Olaf.
Well, I mean, there's so many people one could send. You could send any of the contributors to Little Lit, really, to bail me out of this. But yes, there is. I mean, there is that sad. I think it's that many adults grow concerned that children cannot tell the difference between fantasy and reality. Right? You have an overactive imagination, and so they're afraid you're going to jump off the roof because you've read too many Superman comics, or I don't know what, start a death camp because you've read Mouse too many times. But I actually think that properly, children and interesting adults tend to have a very fluid sense of reality and imagination, and that it is exactly that fluid sense that encourages us to interact with the world. It's the fluid sense that challenges people to create a book. You think, in reality, this book does not exist, but I imagine a book that can exist, and therefore I can have some real effect on the world.
I think that's a good point, because I see one of the importance of making books for children, the fact that they have to be exposed to the individual creating a world as early as possible. Like if from their babyhood they are pacified by passive media, be it television or video games or worlds that have been invented by a consortium of people, they will never get this sense of intimately partaking of something that's been done by one person. I think you get it when you read a book and you sense the author's voice, and that's true in Daniel Andler's writings, that the narrator is always present. He's always insisting on letting you know that he is making this story happen. And it's true when you're reading a comic book, where you actually feel the handwriting and the everything that's been made is on the page.
On television, everything is turned into a story, whether it be a commercial of 15 seconds or a news report or a sitcom or a so-called reality show. You're always told it's a story, it's just a story. The problem that real literate work that appears in books can offer is it's just the opposite. It takes every story and makes it real, because you're actually getting it through something, you know, through a set of lenses of somebody's narration, somebody's words, somebody's experiences, that's very individuated. And as a result, that's a much less safe notion. The idea that all stories are real is a lot more dangerous notion than the one that all reality is just a story.
Yeah, well, what I find, you know, Art, along that line in the Lemony Snicket box, is that this narrator, Lemony, is telling us again and again, I am telling you these stories accurately to avenge my own life and my own suffering. I think that a lot of art comes out of that. And I think, you know, my niece, Melissa Bykovsky, who introduced me to my first Lemony Snicket book, told me that the books that are worth buying for herself are the books that she would want to read again and again, presumably because the story burns off first, and that weird inner stuff that tells us something about the way we feel stays behind, doesn't get put into words because it doesn't need to be. It's the pact between the author and the reader, or the artist and the viewer. It's that thing we know that we don't want to say because we become saps when we say it.
Right. And you know, the thing in the actual premise of the little lit thing, which was to give everybody in this book the same sentence to depart from, means that everybody starts from this place where they're telling a story that starts with the phrase, it was a dark and silly night. Then where each person goes off to is their own dark and silly night, their own specific, very individuated version of their own imaginations, and taking the kids or readers, large or small, along with them. And the fact that it actually has this common denominator, which is the starting point, and that you can then go just about anywhere, tells you that... tells you a lot about how each person is has got a different interior life.
And what's remarkable as you page through Little Lit is that you can tell that each of the artists and or writers who are involved found their choice to be absolutely natural, stemming from It Was a Dark and Silly Night, and yet all of the stories are incredibly different. That, you know, Tony Millionaire, cartoonist artist who composed one, found it absolutely natural that to start with It Was a Dark and Silly Night would be all about an owl running some errands. And then, meanwhile, William Joyce has created an homage to turn-of-the-century Sunday comics, and Patrick McDonald has a story about a shy moon. And all of these people, you could tell, just said, oh, well, obviously, if we start with It Was a Dark and Silly Night, naturally this kind of story proceeds, and yet all the stories are entirely different. And it's both It's that disconnect between an absolute variety of story and the actual similarity of everyone's thought process, which was, oh, well, there's only one place it could go from the sentence, and it would be here, that makes the book so appealing to me, anyway.
One thing that we had to do, because one of the pleasures of putting those books together is to create the objects, so we also like do the design and the production on it. So I had to design a contents page that would be a list of all the stories, and I realized that for once I couldn't put the title of each story because they all have the same title, so I wasn't going to repeat "It Was a Dark and Silly Night" by Lemony Snicket and Richard Sala, and then the same title by William Joyce and the same title, and on and on. So what I had to do is find the something that would give you a sense of the individuality, and that's where we ended up putting the name of the authors, as well as that sample drawing that then gets ended hidden into the end paper. But I love that process, that the book is summed up by the fact that it has the title on top and the incarnations, you know, the avatars of all, you know, that story as it becomes manifest in each person's imagination.
I've been talking with Art Spiegelman, Francoise Mouly, and Daniel Handler, the creator of Lemony Snicket. The first two are the editors and originators of the thrilling series of now three books, Little Lit. The most recent, It Was a Dark and Silly Night, published by HarperCollins. I love not only each of their work, but what they do in bringing out these books, which are, in addition to allowing an external discussion about what's appropriate and better, what's more than appropriate for kids, what's appropriate, you know, for writers to do for kids. The degree of pleasure that I get when I see these books, and sometimes I'm at my friends' apartments where I get to see early versions of the book. It's a pleasure to be friends with Art Spiegelman and Francoise Mouly because they're integrally involved in making the best book imaginable. This book, to me, has an almost musical flow. It's the best in terms of sitting there and being filled by the variety that's in the book, while, as Daniel was saying, the constant beginning point. Who knows if we can begin and jump into such radically different directions? Well, of course we understand why we don't understand each other, and of course we like it better when we do understand each other. Thank you all for joining me. My associate producer is Melinda Siegel. The technical directors today have been Mario Diaz at KCRW and Neil Rausch at the NPR studios in New York. Special production assistance from Alan Howard. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next week on Bookworm.
To the jungles you can go in books.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. Archived editions of this and other Bookworm programs can be found online at kcrw.com, keyword bookworm. Cassette copies are available. For ordering information, call 310-450-5183.
They're your treasured friends in prose and rhyme. Now it's Book of the Mouse.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.